Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehr. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas goes to the UN General Assembly today to ask for an upgrade to non-member observer state status. This after the recent flare-up between Israel and Hamas. Steve Clemens, Washington editor-at-large for The Atlantic, joins us to explain why Abbas is coming to the UN to do this, why most countries will support it, and why the U.S. and a handful of others don't want it to happen. We'll also talk about where Egypt fits in all of this. Steve, you're in Turkey, I understand. Hello from New York.
Hey, good to be with you, and hello from Istanbul.
So what would be the significance of this status change for Palestine from observer to non-member observer state?
It's primarily a symbolic move, just as Mahmoud Abbas's effort last year to try to get the UN Security Council and the body of the United Nations to recognize Palestine as a state was largely a symbolic move, because none of this solves the fundamental problem of the Israel occupation or eventually creating an on-ramp where there's a viable and contiguous state that most people view has to come as a function of negotiations, or at least some sort of imposed reality that's different than what we see today. But it's primarily symbolic, but symbolic moves often matter, and this allows the Palestinians and Mahmoud Abbas to demonstrate the global view and the majority global view that the current conditions, the current status quo of an occupation by Israel of the West Bank and of the Palestinians is unacceptable and illegal. So he is demonstrating, to some degree, a willful resistance against the terms of occupation, and also resisting the United States' prerogatives in this way, because they don't want him to move forward. So it's an important, in my view, a very important symbolic move. Unfortunately, it won't solve everything after this resolution passes, which most people know it will. It is a way to say that the Palestinians are still here, and we're not going to, you know, just continue. They're not going to continue to be a victim without trying to attract global attention to their plight.
So you say largely symbolic, but the Obama administration sent Deputy Secretary of State William Burns and Special Envoy David Hale to try to convince Abbas to call this off. What's the fear?
Well, I think the fear is that they believe that ratcheting up this kind of posture makes the Israelis much less likely to negotiate and participate. And this is a very unfortunate situation. Bill Burns is an outstanding diplomat and really one of the best architects of foreign affairs that we have in government. But Bill is doing his job, which is to execute and try to communicate U.S. Positions. And one thing I found unfortunate in the critique, Bill, that I understand came out of the discussions, is that Burns essentially tried to offer a deal, which was that that Barack Obama and the U.S. government would reengage in the Middle East peace process in a deep and constructive way if Abbas would not proceed. And we shouldn't be trading that. And one of the things I've been writing and saying is that the United States has some complicity, in my view, in the recent crisis between Israel and Gaza, because we walked away from doing anything in the region, after George Mitchell resigned and after Dennis Ross stepped out of the White House, as George Mitchell was the envoy for President Obama in the Middle East peace process. And we just didn't follow up anything. It was a year before the election, and President Obama disengaged and allowed the presidential election to proceed. But I think that we've seen over and over and over that when the United States disengages from this conflict, it turns into violence, and both sides essentially ratchet up issues. And I think right now Mahmoud Abbas has been focused on demonstrating a resistance to U.S. pressure, because the United States has failed to play the stewardship role that many want in getting both sides to begin to credibly deal with each other.
So you say the primary diplomatic consequence would be that Israel will be less likely to get back to negotiations and talks, but what is the talk about the International Criminal Court and what consequence a non-member observer state status would have in terms of Palestinians being able to go there? And
Well, there's a lot of legal work that hasn't been developed. I haven't followed all of this just yet. But the notion of the International Criminal Court and giving a, you know, ratcheting up the situation from a non Palestine has observer status now, but not as a state. But once it becomes a state with even non-observer status, you create potentially different legal dimensions for what the occupation by Israel means in terms of legal terms. The United Nations largely views the Israeli, you know, whether some call it occupation, but stewardship of these disputed territories as an illegal effort. And it could potentially raise the consequence of what soldiers and what others do that are occupying these territories, creating a legal nightmare for them, if they will, in this. Now, I don't believe that was what Mahmoud Abbas necessarily intended. I believe that Abbas is trying to essentially send a signal to the great powers, to Europe, the United States, Russia, the United Nations, that are the four parts of the quartet, that the status quo is unacceptable, and that just laying and waiting for the United States finally to wake up and realize that there are bigger equities at stake here and that we need to reengage. He's being a defiant player in this process by trying to take a legalistic approach. What I find interesting, and it hasn't been discussed much in the media, because you do have a bit of a competition between Hamas and Fatah and Mahmoud Abbas as the president for legitimacy in the eyes of Palestinians. The question is, who represents Palestinian statehood and interests more? And what we've seen in the past is that Hamas's violence and efforts have yielded in many ways more results. In fact, many people look at the unilateral withdrawal by Israel from Gaza as having been something that Hamas largely won. And that you had, when Barack Obama came in, you had Benjamin Netanyahu, you had Mahmoud Abbas as president, you had prime minister in the Palestinian territories who had worked previously with the IMF. And even in that very benign setup of players, nothing was achieved. And so what you see is essentially Mahmoud Abbas saying, we have choices and we don't have to just simply wait for the U.S. lead or for the Israelis to set the right temperature for us to take action on our own behalf and to basically cause. What Hamas, Khaled Mashal, and others are saying is that the current status quo is unacceptable and unreasonable, and they're going to continue to resist the occupation. So it's a situation which I think is one demanding more attention from the West than it's been getting over the past year. And so to a certain degree, many people, and I largely agree, look at what Abbas is doing as a ploy, but it's an important ploy. But I wouldn't, I'm not one who believes that there will be real ramifications in the International Criminal Court.
But yesterday, the leader of Hamas, Khaled Mashal, called for politically divided Palestinians to unite. How would this happen? You have Hamas, who doesn't recognize Israel and doesn't necessarily support a two-state solution. How would they be able to unite? And is that just talk to try to prevent Abbas from sort of getting more legitimacy by this vote today at the UN?
No, I mean, I think that they were united previously. Remember, after the election that brought Hamas to power, was during the Bush administration. George Bush was in favor and supportive of that election. Hamas won more than 50% of the votes and seats, and you essentially had a divided government between Fatah and Hamas in the government that broke up into a very nasty, small civil war between the two sides, where Hamas eventually took Gaza and Fatah took the Western Bank. And I think that there have been other times and other efforts. I was with Senator John McCain last year at the Halifax International Security Forum, and even Senator McCain said, we need to see a unity government, a unified government, to give that entity an opportunity to be mature and to be constructive and to demonstrate what it will do next to Israel. Will it be a constructive player or not constructive player? Has Hamas learned that the kind of efforts and steps it's taken have been unconstructive for the ultimate goal of getting an independent Palestinian state? So the unity part of this is not surprising, and their efforts, what Abbas has been delaying for quite a long time, is an election that would yet again take to the people in Palestine the question of who will leave the government better and who is the most legitimate leader. If that election were held tomorrow, I'm sure that Hamas would win overwhelmingly, because there is the view that Fatah is too accommodationist of both Israel, the United States, and Europe, and has not produced results. What they see is when Hamas has stepped forward, and whether it's been through violence or other kinds of actions, has yielded more results and change in the and change in the equation. So it's complicated, and I think that's the real thing that's driving Mahmoud Abbas and what he's doing, and he's gathering nation by nation by nation to support this. And so to a certain degree, this is not an Israel versus Palestine challenge we see. It is a Mahmoud Abbas versus Hamas challenge, where he's trying to demonstrate to the Palestinian people that he understands their desires and their expectations for where they want to take their world, and that he is committed to that and is the more legitimate and constructive voice.
And you mentioned Abbas collecting supporters nation by nation by nation, and this vote is right. likely to pass today. Let's talk about where European countries are coming down on this. Are they actually articulating out loud that they are voting for this as a signal of support for moderate Palestinian leadership?
I think Europe as a whole previously has largely been supportive of the Palestinian course. What's interesting is they have dropped the notion that Europe will have a unified position in this. So you've got nations like France, who have already, France is extremely important, have already agreed to support the measure and support Mahmoud Abbas, Spain, Norway, Denmark, Switzerland, Austria, Ireland, all on board. Those that are, for various reasons, more ambivalent or either opposed, or Germany will either vote no or abstain. The Netherlands are opposed. Great Britain may possibly abstain in this case. So you have a split in Europe. But what's interesting is that the split between the French and Germans is always important because of the heavyweights inside Europe. But every other, when you look at Europe more broadly, Eastern Europe as a bloc is entirely supportive of the Palestinian measure. So there are very few holdouts in this case. And it's a smaller and smaller group of nations, largely built around U.S. pressure, not wanting this to go forward, to try to maintain a line, if you will, against this, to maintain some credibility with the Israeli side of this. Because most people know if there's ever a fundamental resolution, you've got to have players in this that look credible both to the Palestinians and to the Israelis. And I think that Barack Obama has been singed in the past by accusations that he was overly partial to the Arab or Palestinian side and not a good steward of Israel's interests. And I think that's why these kinds of issues that come up in the United Nations, which the U.S. does not control, are very painful for a president, because Obama, I think, credibly wants to work on and try and do something constructive in Palestinian-Israeli relations and try to create a new on-ramp for a peace effort. I genuinely believe that. But when a measure comes up like this, it's extremely difficult. Now, I would argue, when I see Israeli settlement expansion that is extraordinary and dramatic, that is entirely corrosive of the process as well. And the Israelis have thus far, at least in the last year and a half, have failed to hold that back either. And we are no longer, President Obama is no longer in sort of a sumo contest with Benjamin Netanyahu, where he was basically saying no more settlement expansion, because that's undermining, efforts towards peace as well. The president is not saying that anymore. So on one hand, where the president is not counseling Israel on settlements, but at the same time is trying to tell Mahmoud Abbas, don't take this legalistic question that really is a symbolic effort. It looks to many in the world as silly. Why is the U.S. president, why is Bill Burns, why are others pressuring Mahmoud Abbas with something that's largely a symbolic gesture about their aspirations as a state? But when it comes down to the territory that Israelis have under their control and security in occupied territories that are in great dispute, the United States is largely quiet.
I also want to ask you about Egypt. Mohamed Morsi obviously was crucial in brokering the ceasefire between Hamas and Israel last week. Egypt backs Hamas. How is Egypt viewing this move by Abbas?
I think Egypt is supportive. I think Morsi does not want to, even as a Muslim Brotherhood member, does not want to reopen and have a massive collision with Israel. He's got a lot on his plate right now. That said, when you have a situation where the Palestinian-Israeli ulcer, many people call it, simply won't go away, isn't getting the attention. There isn't a track to peace or resolving this conflict. And it burns as a symbolic issue for many Arab Muslims and Muslims around the world. It creates a political factor for him domestically that he can't walk away from this. And so I think you'll see every Arab state fundamentally support the notion of Palestine achieving statehood and achieving more respect for a position, even if it on the ground realities are that it remains an occupied and divided territory.
Oh, so interesting. Before we go, you're in Turkey today. On the front page of the New York Times, there's a story about how American officials are weighing whether the U.S. and NATO should get more involved in the conflict in Syria and help Turkey defend itself against attacks from Syria with Patriot missiles. What's going on over there right now?
Well, I mean, there's obviously an enormous amount of concern about the Syria conflict spreading over the borders. In fact, I would argue that Bashar al-Assad has had that in mind all along. And it's the way in which he raises his stock, if you will, as being, you know, a potential threat to the region. It might invite attacks and whatnot inside, but it adds to his leverage in whatever's negotiated down the road. And you have quite a number of Kurdish Syrians on the border that also mix with the Iraqi Kurds in the region. And, of course, the Kurds are considered to be often a destabilizing and point of concern inside Turkey. So spilling over and the movement of the Kurds inside Turkey is something that they look at as a real they would look at internally as an existential threat. They've wanted to deploy Patriot missiles to protect them if there's spillover. And, of course, there are many refugees that have gone over the border into Turkey, and a lot of the Syrian resistance is now run out of Turkey, that there are camps and planners. When we send advisors to meet with Syrian resistance and to try to help them with targeting and with intelligence, Europeans are doing this as well. It's all from the Turkish side of this. So Turkey's in the conflict now, and then the question is, do the rules of NATO, where one nation is attacked or a threat, apply to all others? And this has raised a really interesting question. Turkey is a vital NATO member, and if NATO doesn't demonstrate to Turkey that it matters just as much as any other member and that its security matters, it will create enormous tensions and put, I think, a further wedge between Turkey and Europe in general. I'm about to go hear the Deputy Prime Minister of Turkey speak to this very issue. So maybe tomorrow we can talk about what his comments are. But he is, I think, Turkey right now has been a constructive and important force in NATO, and they have committed troops. They've been, you know, a loyal player in this. They're, you know, from a geostrategic perspective, a fascinating nation because they straddle Europe, straddle the Arab world, and are reasserting themselves in creative ways. But in this case, they believe their security is threatened in Syria and believe that NATO has to come and be a constructive participant in that, in helping to protect their security. And so it'll be interesting to see how it evolves.
Wow, so many relationships on the move right now. Steve Clemens, Washington editor-at-large for The Atlantic, thanks so much for joining us and helping us understand.
My pleasure. Great to talk to you.
Up next, a new study about your potentially toxic couch. I'm Anna Sale. Stay with us.